Which is a little appropriate for today because that's the way that I kind of feel about Philip Bretherton's Alistair in this entire series. But it was a product of its time, so if that's the one biggest complaint I have, it's still doing pretty good. Hi, Magnus. Welcome back. We've had some Zoom technical issues, so I'm saying welcome back because we've been trying to figure out how to actually record this season three to get it out to you, our adoring public and fans. Well, Magnus probably have fans in Doring Public. But yes, hello, Magnus.
Hello. I'm glad that we've managed to finally get to connect in some form over Zoom. Oh my goodness. How many gays does it take to sort out a technical problem?
Well, there are some gays that are good at IT. I just don't happen to be one of them. I had to look at my phone once when someone asked me if it was an Apple to see if I had an apple on the back of it. So that just tells you how much I know about technology. But when it works, it's great. Just like all the work that you do making queer stories, I'm so happy to have you here today. We're still doing Star-Crossed Lovers because we're finishing up February as we march into March, as it were. And so my kind of I've been wanting to talk about this series for a while. This series was co-written by the same guy who co-wrote one of my other favorite BBC series. This came in at number 29 on the list of the best 100 BBC sitcoms. Vicar of Dibley was number 3, which I think is a crime because Vicar of Dibley should be much higher than that. And I think it was your dad's army show that came in at number 4 actually on that program, if I remember correctly.
Heresy.
Blackadder was either number 1 or number 2, and it's really hard to beat Blackadder. Fawlty Towers didn't make the top 10, which I was surprised by, because in America, that's kind of the gold standard.
And it's a cult classic over here. Interesting. What is this list that you speak of?
So it was so I found it on Wiki. I have to find it again because I found it when I was doing my original research and now I can't find it. But it was so it was like a voting thing. There was like a mini series of episodes that were all hosted by different people that had done these shows or people that were famous in Britain at the time. And like people could call in and vote. So each episode had a theme around one show where the person was trying to get the public to vote for. And out of that, there was a list of 100, and this became number 29. Let me see if I can find that link again. Oh, yes, it was voted 29 in Britain's best sitcom. Unfortunately, I can only see the top 10, so I have no idea what everything won. But so here's the list of the top 10 as voted in, what year is this? As voted
Ooh,
in
this.
2003. So the top 10
Ooh,
list
interesting.
voted in 2003. The top one is Only Fools and Horses.
Okay.
Blackadder made number 2. Vicar of Dibley was number 3. Number 4 was Dad's Army. Nope, I was wrong. Fawlty Towers is number 5. It still seems low for Fawlty Towers, just because in America, when I think about BBC comedy, that's one of the ones I think about. Yes, Minister was number 6. Porridge was number 7. Open All Hours was number 8. The Good Life, which is related to what we're talking about today, was number 9 and is one of my personal favorites. And One Foot in the Grave is number 10, which just sounds like a barrel of laughs calling your sitcom One Foot in the Grave.
Indeed. It's not too bad. I can see why the list is what it is.
I'm a little bummed that two of my favorites aren't on the list at all. That makes me kind of sad. The Good Life being on the list makes up for it, but Hyacinth Bouquet is not on the list. Mrs. Slocum's not on the list. So, like, I'm a little sad about that, but I understand it's not my country, so it's not my choice.
Yes. But returning to the our topic of conversation for today, sir, you were saying that you've been wanting to speak about this particular show for a while now.
Sure. This was my when I was little. So in America, in PBS, in some of the markets, we got a whole bunch of BBC programming because it was fairly cheap over here because it just didn't have as big a thing. So along with Are You Being Served and Keeping Up Appearances and very, very classic Doctor Who, I was kind of raised on as time goes by. For me, I have this in my mind's eye, I see it, and it's this very like vintage, romanticized, glossy filter, very hip. When I think about it, I don't think about it being filmed in the 90s. To me, it reads much older in a good way. I think it's because it's set kind of in the 90s, but most of it revolves around things that happened like in the Korean War, but in like current context in a way. So I don't know. I have a really romantic view of it. It also looks really good on a DVD shelf because all of the DVDs are uniform, except they have different colors, and they've got Jeffrey Palmer and Judi Dench on the cover most of the time, except for a couple of the reunion specials. It's just something very classy about how the show is presented. Right up to the As Time Goes By, as the theme song of it. It's both the name of the show and the theme song, which is really cool.
I have to say, when I was doing a bit of research to remind myself about this show, I was surprised that it was 1992 to 2005, because my recollection is I'd thought it was a bit older than that. There's a certain vintage quality to it, but at the same time, not vintage in a negative connotation at all. Rather the sort of vintage quality you get with the Golden Girls, for
Yeah.
example. There's a nice sort of warm glow to it. But
And about
yeah,
half,
it's
yeah.
mm.
And about
Go
half the
on.
cast is of the Golden Girl age too. There's actually active episodes in the second half of the series that deal with Lionel and Jean getting older and the pride that comes with things like if there's a whole episode about I think it's Jean needing hearing aid. There's a whole season series, they call it series. There's a whole series devoted to them having a place in the country foisted on them. A lot of things that happen in the show are things that are foisted onto a person by another person, but that's sort of the BBC sitcom-y type thing, so.
Thinking about point you just made before, it's easy to forget that a lot of these people, as you say, were from that same generation that the Golden Girls cast was. A lot of these shows that we've spoken about in films very much were going side by side, or also were in around the same time period and such. I think it's easy to sometimes forget the fact that they didn't exist in a bubble, but it's very likely that Dame Judy actually did meet some of the cast in the past before they moved on and such.
Well, and this show was made to give Judi Dench a television premiere, because before this she had been mostly a stage actress. So this show was really not written around her. The people that wrote this show, one of them is Bob Larbee, who, along with Esmond, wrote a good portion of the sitcoms that happened between the 60s and the 90s. But this was Larbee kind of on his own at the later portion of his career. And it was written specifically with Judi Dench to play Jean. There's some rumors that it was made for Jean Worthington to play Jean, and Jean Worthington was like, "No, darling, I'm not doing this, I guess." But Judi Dench was definitely considered for the role. This is my favorite Judi Dench thing. I know people like her in the James Bond film. I've seen performances of her on stage, but when I think about Judi Dench, I think about her as Jean. And as time goes by, navigating being a working woman, falling in love later in life. The whole point of them as star-crossed lovers is kind of the conceit of the whole show. And it's an impressive conceit to come up and up again that you never really get tired of because the way it unfolds is very sweet, even in the comic misunderstandings. There's something about the pacing of as time goes by that made me surprised that it was 29th on the list of sitcoms and not much higher. I still want to know where Are You Being Served ended up on this list because you only see the top 10, and it's driving me absolutely bananas that I can't find out.
What was the name of that list again? Maybe I'll have a quick look whilst we continue talking and see if I can find it.
So it's called Britain's Best Sitcom. Viewers could vote via telephone, SMS, or BBC Online. So maybe I just didn't do enough digging on BBC Online to see. But yeah, so there's the list isn't easily accessible on the internet. I don't think I Googled or and you think I'd be able to find it because Jonathan Ross summarized the program in the first episode, and Jonathan Ross loves to be seen. So you think that I'd be able to find it. What's kind of nice is that like hosts included people like Rowan Atkinson, John Cleese, David Renwick. John Sullivan is on there, who advocated for Only Fools and Horses. It's a lot of dudes, not a lot of like women talking here. Some presented like Carol Vorderman was did advocate for the Vicar of Dibley, and Carol, of course, I think Carol was in the show. I can't remember. No, I just think she really liked Vicar of Dibley, but I can't blame her because I love Vicar of Dibley as well. I love the properly, when I say that, I mean I love the version where you get the DVD where it's in the correct order and all the episodes are there, unlike how Netflix does it. This is one thing for people looking up some of this stuff on streaming services and to find it, even on BritBox, this isn't always, it's not always in the right order. Sometimes you can get mixed up. Series for As Time Goes By, the first few series are much shorter, and like they end up going from like 13 episode series to like 24 episode series. The 10th season, quote unquote, from 2005 is actually just like two Christmas specials that were then serialized after the fact. So, much like with Vicar of Dibley, if you find As Time Goes By on a streaming service, hope that the episodes are in order. They kind of make sense out of order, but there are some things that don't. But generally speaking, I have the same problem I have with the Twilight Zone. When Hulu put the Twilight Zone on, they did seasons out of order, and it drove me insane because they weren't even seasons that had the same intro. Luckily, with As Time Goes By, you don't have that. They do have reunion special DVDs, but they're not part of the show, so the reunions have to be kind of sought out separately. They're not too expensive. I'm not invested enough to buy it. But as far as rom-coms go, and as far as Bob Larbee productions go, I think the reason I like As Time Goes By is because it reminds me of The Good Life a lot, and The Good Life is the one about the two sets of neighbors, one of which is going in a very self-sustaining way, so they're growing their own food. They have this thing about not buying they have this thing about not buying what's the word I'm looking for? They're going all natural. They're going very granola, and then you've got the next door neighbors that are very opposite of the granola thing. And they spend a good amount of years learning to like live next to each other. And As Time Goes By is really about that, about learning to live next to each other. Learning how to talk to your partner about what they need and what they want. Something great about Gene and Lionel is that they fell in love and then they lost touch and then they fell in love again. And we as the viewers are kind of voyeurs on them falling in love for the second time and seeing how Sandy and Judith is Jean's daughter, and Sandy is one of Jean's employee and Judith's friend, and ends up living in the house with them. Learning how people talk together is something that, as time goes by, does tremendously well. There's little bits that are like really funny, but generally, the show is about communication, and I think that's really special and sweet.
Yes. So, not to go off too much on tangent, but I have found the list, sir.
Oh, good. I couldn't find it, so I'm glad you did.
It's from you can thank my research skills, good sir. I'm putting my professional life to good use here. The reason you couldn't find it is it's pretty much been deleted slash archived. So I had to use a tool to pull up an archived version of the web page.
Oh my God, that sounds extreme, but I appreciate it. It's like me trying to figure out what date Thin Mints are going to come out in America so I know when I can finally buy them yearly. So,
Well, You have people coming to you asking for archived reports from about 20 years ago, and this sort of thing becomes quite a normal thing to do, to be honest.
I appreciate that.
At number 11 was Far for Ted. At number 12 is Keeping Up Appearances.
There we go. I wondered. Keeping up appearances does get a little bit repetitive about end to mid of the show. So I can't understand why that's a little lower, I guess.
Was there any of the other ones you wanted to know?
Are You Being Served, which is my classic BBC sitcom, and I mean, I'm surprised it's not in the top 10.
Where do you think it is?
I'm sure I don't know, but this is number 29. So if it's 50 or under, I'm gonna throw, or if it's 50 or over, I'm gonna like throw something.
You're going to demand your pussy
I'm going
for
to email Jonathan
Jingle
Ross myself and berate him as a gay man is what's going to happen.
Well, hold back your nails, good sir. It's number 20.
Oh, well, that's not too bad. But I know that you love Dad's Army, and that's a pretty good showing for Keeping Up Appearances and for keeping and for Are You Being Served. Of course, in America we had our own sitcom, so like sitcoms like Coupling would become Friends, so we have kind of American version sometimes of British stuff. I actually think Coupling is better than Friends in a lot of ways, shorter too. But as time goes by, do you have any memories of as time goes by? Like, did doing the research, you were like, I'm pretty sure I've never seen this show before.
I have to admit, I remember a bit of it from when I was little, because my parents would put it on the background sometimes. It wasn't really a staple in our household, though, so I had forgotten about it for quite some time. But when you brought up the show as something for us to research in preparation for a episode, I did start to get some recollection from the show. I'm not sure it's too well remembered now, though. I believe that list that we were looking at before was for about nearly 2 decades ago. I wouldn't be surprised if it might be a bit lower down the list now.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a shame, to be honest, especially when you consider like how much talent is in this show. They had some really solid British talent in it.
To be
But in terms,
fair, oh no, go ahead. Yeah, in
I
terms
was
of,
just
yeah.
it's to answer your question, I do struggle to remember anything solidly about it. I do admit.
I do think, to be fair, there are some things about As Time Goes By that have not aged well. Alistair, who is kind of the love interest that ends up kind of in the finale of the show getting married to Judith, who he spends almost the whole series chasing, has this very, like, I'm gonna chase you, Steve Urkel fascination thing going on, which is a little cringy. There's these side characters that are related to Gene, I think, that are invested in like American country music. So there's some like cringy stuff and as time goes by, there's like some female secretary characters that are way too much of a stereotype. But there's a really interesting thing in the first few seasons where it almost feels like it's going to be a younger man, older woman show. For just a moment, there's this really great series of episodes in the first couple seasons where it looks like Alistair is legitimately going to go after Jean and Judith is legitimately going to go after Lionel. And it's kind of a really nice twist. And I think what I love about the show is those first few seasons, because after they get like the manor house in the country and it does start to feel very formulaic. In the last couple of seasons, because the will they won't they is over, so we know Judith and Alistair are going to get married. Sandy finds a hunky policeman, hockey player, firefighter. He does stuff in uniforms. She finds a hunky guy in uniform, And so, like, we know things are going to get wrapped up and there's going to be love and misunderstandings. The first couple of seasons, just the revelation of they lost touch because the army dropped their post, basically. Like, they lost touch while he was stationed for in the Korean War. And they both went off and had separate lives and had, like, love affairs and got married to other people, and they find each other again. And my favorite thing is kind of the big reveal of, no, I actually did send the letters, but they ended up in like a military museum. Like, one of the, I think it's the end of season one or series one is the like their love letters end up in a museum somewhere because they were lost, but they were found. And there's this great scene of Judi Dench's Jean, and you can just hear the history and the caring in her voice as she reads these fictitious letters. And it's like seeing her on the Graham Norton show reading Shakespeare, right? There's something kind of wonderful about how the misunderstandings work in the first few seasons, because they don't feel so cringy. They don't feel so Steve Urkel from Family Matters ch chasing Laura. There's something really beautiful about the way the story unfolds when it's not just about the fun, but it's also kind of about the heart and how people learn to talk to each other. Also, the weird subplot about Lionel living in Kenya, so like the book that he's writing about his life throughout the course of the show is like about his time in Kenya growing coffee, and they keep trying to make it like this like sexy colonialist thing, and every time they try to make it a sexy colonialist thing, it becomes absolutely absurd and farcical. And it's such a good political statement about why colonialism doesn't work, because it's not sexy. And he's like, they have one episode where they have him like dressed up as a hunter for some reason, and he's like, I made coffee beans. There's no hunting in this book. I literally did coffee in Kenya.
Was this
It's
for the
a
book cover?
yeah, it's for the book cover. It's like they try to make him into like sexy pinup Jumanji daddy, and it just everybody looks uncomfortable in it, and it works really well. They do eventually do a couple episodes in Los Angeles. They actually I don't know if they filmed in LA, but they had like a set, and it was kind of showing the ins and outs of getting something approved for TV as well. But that's in a later season, and that's not really the heart of the show. But yeah, the episode where they make Lionel in his kind of like 60-year-old body dress up as like a hunky 30-year-old Fabio type model, and he's just like, this is not what the book is about at all.
Damn it. Why Lionel couldn't get on top, couldn't get in there with the whole, like, commercial marketing. Like, that's how you sell you the copies of your books, That's what people want to find in Waterstones on the must-read shelves and such.
Yes, and that's kind of what Alistair says. Alistair is kind of this like wacky, eccentric trust fund baby kid, so he solves a lot of the problems that he creates with money. He's almost the brash American amongst a whole bunch of like British people just doing their best. It's an interesting thing to watch because it feels like he's playing a caricature of an American. He barely has an accent. It's like the Doctor Who joke when we met Christopher Eccleston, and Rose asks the doctor, why do you sound like you're from the north? And he's like, lots of planets have a north. That's kind of how I feel about Alistair in this show. He feels like he's like from a different show because he's all about business, even in trying to woo Judith, who eventually does marry him in kind of the show's sort of finale. If you don't include the Christmas movies as a series, their wedding is the sort of finale of the whole thing.
So, would you argue that the show managed to avoid the sitcom curse in the end, where you take a sitcom and they continue to produce season after season, and the narrative starts to get like worn or stretched and such. Do you think they managed to avoid that in the end, or did they fall into that trap?
I think they did. I don't think they did as good a job as Good Life. I think that sitcom curse does apply. As much as I love both Keeping Up Appearances and Are You Being Served, I do think that curse applies to them both. I think as time goes by and The Good Life, which are both my kind of like two top two Larby shows, avoid it because they have enough side characters and enough of an interesting thing that the main characters are trying to do. So like the struggle for Jean, the struggle for Judi Dench is not just that she's trying to run a secretarial agency, which is kind of a big to-do at the time, but also she's trying to expand it and open up a second branch. There's a whole subplot for that for her. So her life with Lionel, Jeffrey Palmer's character, who's trying to get his book released, it's interesting because they have things to talk about. They have plots they have to resolve that aren't just about their relationship. I think that's one of the weaknesses of the later seasons of Friends, is that they no longer have work issues they have to resolve. It's all about like different emotional issues. I have other issues with Friends in the later seasons, like they're not doing open homophobia, but there's some homophobia stuff going on that I don't like. And that's a whole conversation about Friends in a whole different way. But there's something interesting in that all of the characters in as time goes by have jobs. They have lives that take them out into the community, even after Jean actually retires from her typing CEO business she has. She goes back to work in a charity shop because retirement isn't enough. Just being with Lionel isn't enough. They actually have, there's a whole multi-episode mini arc about where they're going to live and how neither of them want to move, even though they want to be together and like sleep in the same bed. There's something very romantic to me about, even with like all of the misunderstandings and the comedy, there's something very romantic about, hey, I really like my place, but I really love you. Here's the tension. How do we like resolve this like adults? It's a different sort of comic misunderstanding because it's not about the I can't tell you that I don't want to move in with you. I can't tell you you're a terrible husband, a la King of Queens, because I have to sound like a shrew. Neither of them sound like a shrew. They don't always talk to each other, but 90% of the time they're like, hey, we're adults. What's going on with you? And there's something very rich about that I really love.
There's a real sense of, well, a real sense, I was about to say realism. There's an actual sense of realism that runs through the show. You're not just get having farcical situations and over the top misunderstandings. You're having situations that are very much grounded within understandable things that are happening, you know, when you're settled into your life so well, but you have a change of situation like having a new partner, a new husband. Like, can you feel able to move on from a home that you've had for years and years, if not decades? Like, do you feel that you can move on? Or if you both have a separate home that you love, you know, who in the relationship should give that up? And connecting it to what you're saying before about the characters having almost like their own lives and such, and their own interests outside of each their relationship with each other. There's something in it that a person watching can really relate to, and that Judy's plot working within the charity shop, that it's true to life. So many people like want to dedicate themselves to interests, you know, just because you retire, it's not the end of your life, so to speak. It is, shall we say, as your time is going by.
Yeah, I love that. I think for American listeners, if you need a show to hang your hat on that has a kind of thematic line, I would say As Time Goes By is quite a bit like Who's the Boss, in that each of the characters want something. They grow together. They live close enough to each other, if not with each other. There are misunderstandings where people see each other naked through happenstance in the bathroom. There's literally an episode like that, where they have a whole subplot where they're trying to decide how to build a second bathroom, but not have it cost as much money because Lionel walks in on Sandy, in the shower once, and like Who's the Boss does almost the same exact episode. A little different. It's not quite the same, but it's real life between people. And I think that's what makes it. There are some absurdities. There's an episode where Alistair literally gets on a horse in armor so he can be Judith Knight in shining armor, which is a little bit much and a little bit farther absurd than I wanted to go in the show. But those moments are few and far between. If you like character work from comedic actors of a certain age, this show has a lot of them. It's also kind of fun to watch how they do the age makeup on Judi Dench because they kind of allow her to age. Like, Judy and Sandy don't get that as much because they're not the same age throughout the show, but they're, pretty youthful when the show starts. They let Jean, like, they don't try to mask that she's getting older. Like, they let her and Jeffrey Palmer, like, actually age with something that looks like grace, as opposed to like one day you're a babe, the next day you're a grown. Like that doesn't happen. Like you can watch the progression of Judy's like real life age over the course of these shows, and it's incredible makeup work.
Going back to a point that I made earlier, this show premiered in 1992 and it technically finished in 2005. So you are seeing a real life progression of almost a decade and a half of these people's lives. And Judy started the show when she wasn't like in her youth. I believe that she might have been around 60 when she started the show. She's 89 now. And the show was about just over 30 years ago now. So yeah, she was so it's understandable that she would naturally age, as would the other characters during that period.
But
So
they
in
let
terms of
her
the show,
age. They don't let them age all the time, and they let her age, which is great. They did it with Grace, which is lovely.
yes. So perhaps that's another bit of the overall charm to this show, like all of these fine little details and this willingness to be tender and to let the romance actually take place in the show, whilst also having it as an actual sitcom.
Also, for people that love older interior design from the 90s and the 80s, they film in like clubs and restaurants, I think, on location. And so if you want to see what like a wild carpet looks like in a club in the 90s in Britain, if you want to see like what women were wearing that were secretaries in the 90s, like they Like I cannot express to you like the color palette of some of the places that they set these characters. It's like not any color, but it is a color. Your mind looks at it and goes, that is green, orange, maybe? It's wild and I adore it because we don't do that anymore because we're afraid so much. So afraid.
Well, that's why I love these shows and these comedies from different time periods. They're a real great look into what was going on at the time. And I don't know, I rarely view these comedies as like dated because of the different fashions and lifestyles that you see going on from that time. I suppose if anything dates it, it's the occasional dated references to how people perceived different like ethnicities and such. I
There are no gay
recently
people in this show. I think that's the one thing that dates it for me is, are you telling me there were no gay people living in London in the early 90s. Come on, you can't tell me Sandy, especially with her affinity for people in uniforms, never met a gay person. Like, John Inman lived in your country. I know there were gay people in the 90s in Britain. Come on.
They were under a rock somewhere, darling.
Oh, that makes me sad. That's the one thing they needed in the show that I kind of have a critique of, because there are a couple things, like they have one episode that's about stalking, which is a little but the I always feel like Judy and Sandy are kind of missing a gay BFF to be like, girl, you don't want to go out with a guy that shows up on a little horse. He's trying too hard. But she also gets to tell him he's trying too hard. So it feels like maybe she had a gay best friend in the wings somewhere.
Well, if they ever did a reunion spe if they ever did some sort of like reunion special, I know unfortunately Lionel's actor sadly passed away a few years ago, but maybe for Red Nose Day they might get Judi Dench and a few of the other cast members to do something. Perhaps they would include, say, like a long lost gay nephew or something.
They did do a special between a couple of the reunions. It wasn't for Red Nose Day, it was for something like Red Nose Day, though. But there is a special floating about that they did for one of those kind of events. I can't find it as I'm scrolling. And of course, we're gonna be coming to the end of episode here in a second. But yeah, I just wanted to give people a chance to hear about this show. I think it's very special. And especially for people that didn't experience the first time, if you've got like BritBox, you should totally take a look at it if it's still on there.
Yes. Oh, well, I'm sure it will be, sir. Did you have any last words for this episode?
No, but I want everyone to stay tuned for something a little special and a little different. And thank you for waiting so patiently for the episode that you're listening to currently. So stick around for just a couple of minutes for something special. Thank you, everyone, for sticking with us. We appreciate you very much, both Magnus and I, for being part of the Everything is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff community. So we wanted to premiere a little extra thing as a way of saying thank you for sticking around while we were dealing with technical issues. And I'm kind of calling it the pop culture moment. And so this is stuff that we interact with that surprises us, stuff we didn't expect. Stuff that we see like that kind of makes us stop and think. And so I had this first one, I had this come up that I kind of wanted to talk about because I couldn't figure out how to make it into a full episode. And I want to talk about the song Rose's Turn from, well, I want to talk about the Glee version actually. Because I keep seeing this now. It's like a TikTok thing now, and I don't know if people know what they're actually doing a lip sync for. So Magnus, have you actually seen this? It's people doing a moment from Rose's Turn. It goes, all that work and what did it get me? Why did I do it? Have you seen these TikToks that have been going around?
No, I
Okay.
will admit, I have not seen them. So this is a trend that has currently flown over my head.
It's okay. I think I get them because I follow a bunch of musical theater people. So maybe that's one thing. But so what's interesting is that they're not using like the original Gypsy Lo. So the story of Gypsy, it's a musical about a stage mom that is very successful in getting her daughter to be famous. And then the fallout from that is that the mom feels used, even though she's been using her daughter. Bette Midler, did a telecast of Gypsy in the 90s, quite famously, probably one of the better versions of Gypsy. The song Rose's Turn was originally written for Ethel Merman. I believe it's Ethel Merman, and it was written by Stephen Sondheim. So I'm a big fan of the show because I'm a big fan of Sondheim. But what's interesting is that in 2009, when Glee premiered, we met Kurt Hummel, who was the version of it that is now famous. We hadn't yet gotten to know him well enough to know that he would eventually be doing the song. So Chris Colfer, who plays Kurt Hummel on Glee, is what they call a countertenor. So if you have been subject, if you have enjoyed slash been subjected to the song, you might stop and think, wait, is that a tenor song? But no, he's a countertenor, so it's a song written more for a female voice, but a male voice can sing. That's not a problem. This song happens in the middle of season two during what I call Kurt's cringe arc, where he's trying really hard to set up his dad, played by Mike O'Malley, with Finn's mom, while also still crushing on Finn, the straight football player from season one. And it's super uncomfortable, and it's all kind of this big thing of Ryan Murphy is using Kurt as his self-insert into the world. So it's cringy for a couple of reasons. But I kind of find it interesting that in the year of our Lord 2024, I'm hearing Chris Colfer singing as Kurt Hummel all over again. It's interesting that you haven't heard this yet. It's a pivotal moment for the character, and it's one of the stronger moments between Bert and Kurt. That's a character's name, by the way. A guy named Bert named his son Kurt. That's a little too on the nose for a couple of reasons. But it's one of three or four really good conversations they have. One of the things that Glee did right that I will always hold and commend for is to cast Mike O'Malley as Kurt's dad. And in the first episode where Kurt comes out in season one, because he comes out in several episodes, when he comes out to his dad in, they have a really like frank conversation about it. In this episode, he and his dad have a really frank conversation about how Bert is handling Kurt being gay in a small Midwestern town. And like, Kurt is not a perfect angel in this conversation. What's great is that these two characters are not perfect angels. Like, if we ever do a full episode about Glee for whatever reason, there's this really great thing that Glee does where none of the adults are perfect. Some are way less perfect than others, but all of the adults basically build teams in their own way. And I think the reason this works with Mike O'Malley is Mike O'Malley has actually played, he played a gay character in a movie that I cannot remember the name of. And then he had a really great role on a Fox sitcom for a couple of years after Glee, whose name I also can't remember, but he played like either the lead character or the next door neighbor. He always plays really well. And I think one of the things that made Glee work was Bert, was his kind of dad mechanic character. Kurt is a little scummy. This song in particular actually kind of highlights how scummy Kurt is. He also does, in the course of the show, he did Lay Jazz Hot as a self duet, which was really good. And his struggle with his sexuality is a really important thing that they can't reference in the show because the show both does and does not exist in the universe it came from. But it's this really interesting thing where I'm watching a whole bunch of people perform a lip sync of a song that was done as a pop standard of a Broadway classic on a television show that premiered in 2009. And so I've seen this a couple of times of people using this kind of part of this bridge, because the part that is on the part that people are doing, the all that work and what did it get me part, is sort of a bridge to a second part of a song about someone feeling selfish and wanting things for themselves. And in context, it's super bad and super cringe. And it eventually does come out.
But I wonder whether they're not looking at it within the broader context. It's a sad fact of life that a number of these quick trends will take an appealing visual or song lyrics, and they'll sort of capture it and they'll go with it, doing their own rendition, so to speak. But it's a snapshot. It's a minuscule element of a wider work often. And it's not like considering exactly where it's coming from or anything. It's just sort of where does this all this work get me? That very lyric will appeal to someone seeing it from the context of what that lyrics mean, not, that it's only a small facet of the wider work. So that's probably where they're coming from with this. I question whether half the people referencing this even know that it's a Glee rendition and then it's a rendition from a Broadway show.
Yeah, I do wonder that too, because I know Instagram specifically went through and did a purge about 6 months ago of a lot of music. So I do wonder kind of what rights they hold now, and if the reason we're not hearing the Bette Midler version is because of that. But there's something interesting about Kurt as an imperfect twink character and people gravitating toward one of his I'm Selfish songs. He's not always selfish, but he is an imperfect character. What's interesting too is this follows closely on the heels of the Celine Dion, "It's All Coming Back to Me Now" trend, or it's one of the Celine Dion songs that then you'd see people with like fans blowing in the wind to give people like perfect Celine Dion Beyoncé hair. I do love this kind of trend of people taking songs and really finding enthusiasm in them and kind of making them personal. I do like that we still have that on the internet until the world until the police of the internet find a way to monetize it, as I should say.
Oh, you know what'll be the next one after this trend?
Well, they've already
Something
done Toto by Africa, so it won't be
different.
Toto.
No, I people are going to see the Wicked film and there'll be a lot of renditions of Gravity popping up later this year.
That was big on the show. That was a big off the show. I mean, Tim Murray is doing a lot of the Lord's work for Wicked. Like, he has a whole stand-up show where he basically talks about Wicked, and it's called Witches. I don't know what's all involved in it, but people are very much celebrating some of this now kind of retro Broadway stuff. Believe it or not, Wicked is considered retro now. It's been around long enough. It's not quite vintage yet, but it's retro.
Retro. Oh my goodness.
I know, because we're getting up there. It's like we're talking about As Time Goes By that ended. You said it ended in 2005, so it's almost 20 years old now. And I'm like, well, that doesn't seem right, but I don't know enough information about time to stop it, kind of thing.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
But well, sorry, go on.
I just wanted to make like a pop culture based kind of note, things that were happening in pop culture that maybe a listener really liked or had questions about or didn't know that the kind of femme voice singing a song from Rose's Turn was. And so for people interested, it's from Glee season two, I want to say. I can't remember if it's I think it's the back half of season two, because season two is one of the seasons they kind of cut in half, if I remember correctly. It's all kind of a weird timeline, because Ryan Murphy couldn't figure out how to do a show in one season, so Glee, he kind of cut some of the seasons in half, but also didn't cut the seasons in half. It's very strange. But yeah, I just wanted to make a space where every now and then we can talk about some kind of pop culture moments we're noticing that mean something to us. And if you have any pop culture moments you're noticing, we want to hear about them from you, definitely. And things that maybe we can potentially talk about that are of interest to you. Like if they start talking about like the movie Children of Men or something, and you find it very strange, or in November when we start seeing the when we start seeing the Guy Fawkes masks in November, and you're like, "Hey, why haven't the gays talked about V for Vendetta?" We want to know if you want to hear that from us.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. And you can always leave comments and such on the podcast videos and such. And well, we're available to get directly in contact with as well, aren't we?
It's true. And of course, you always want to check out Magnus's Instagram if you haven't checked that out yet, because there's always cool stuff coming down the pipe, because Magnus does a lot of cool queer stuff. I do too, but in a different way. I'm more of a tabletop gaming gay, and you're more of an Arthurial gay, I would say.
Ooh, I like the word. Ugh, I can't pronounce it now. I won't even
It's
try. I'll
true.
just mangle it with my tongue.
All that work, and what did it get you? What did it get you?
Oh dear.